Your foolhardiness would help you lose. Yeah.
My indecisiveness would probably kill me.
Welcome to Red Wine Reads, a community of book lovers talking about our favorite and not so favorite books while pouring a glass or two of wine. And with me today is our resident everything expert, Ella Kopakin. Now, before we start, I should warn you that we do spoil the endings of the books we review. This episode especially, we do spoil it. So if you don't like it, then please go finish the book and come right back to this episode. My goal is to have you read these books with us so you can participate in the conversation. At the beginning of each month, I outline the books we will be reviewing. So whether you want to read one, none, or all of them, the choice is up to you. These reviews are not backed by any science or experience, just purely two opinionated amateur readers. You may hate the books we love or love the books we hate. Everyone has different tastes, but we hope this podcast is fun to listen to, no matter how you like your books. So without further ado, let's pull some corks and get reading. This week we read The Mist by Stephen King.
Welcome to Red Wine Reads. Ella, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Jenna. I'm so happy to be here.
What are we drinking today?
Oh, guys, it's a big day because Ella always either forgets that we're supposed to be drinking on this podcast or I'm drinking hard alcohol. But today, I am drinking rosé. I have understood the assignment. What are you drinking, Jenna?
I am also drinking rosé.
I will say there's nothing that I think works with this book less than rosé.
I was saying the same thing.
We need like a dark, thick red.
Yeah.
And instead we're drinking like a summer wine.
Yep. But that's what you get when the weather outside is 88 degrees.
It's humid here, folks. It's humid.
It's misty. Let's get into it. We read The Mist by Stephen King. I guess this is my first real Stephen King novel, or I guess novella, but I lied when I said I've never read a Stephen King book because I just realized that I have read a Stephen King book, but I've read his young adult book, The Institute.
Oh, how was that?
It was phenomenal. It was so good. It was kind of like Stranger Things of if you just took the like hospital scenes of Elle in the hospital doing all the tests, it's like that.
Oh, okay.
That is what The Institute is about. Because it's about, like, telekinetic kids.
That's very cool. I mean, I have a feeling Stranger Things will come up again later.
Yep.
In our recommendations, so stay tuned, everybody. If you want to hear us be the 1,000th podcast to talk about Stranger Things this summer, get ready.
It's on the mind. I just finished season 4 last night, 2 nights ago.
Oh,
so
very exciting. No, but this is a podcast about Stephen King and why I love Stephen King. I honestly can't believe that this is only your first adult Stephen King book. I went through a really hardcore Stephen King phase starting from like age 12 to like 15. Which, for those who haven't read Stephen King before, isn't really the age that you should be reading, like, The Shining.
Probably not. Yeah, this makes me want to go, like, through his entire list of books.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not good, because I don't have the time for that. Maybe in 2 years, we'll read just purely Stephen King books for an entire year.
I would love that. I mean, I think he's, like, one of those people who genuinely lives up to the hype of he deserves what he gets.
Yes. And, okay, we gotta get back on track before we dive right into this.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I know. I'm getting sidetracked too. But we'll just start with some quick facts and then we'll dive right in. We'll get into the nitty gritty.
Okay.
So, quick facts about this book. The storm that happens at the beginning of this book was actually inspired by a real life storm that King was in. And then he took his son to go get hot dog buns at the store. And while he was there, he's like, what if there were like some weird, giant, prehistoric creatures flying around the store? And that's how he got the idea for The Mist.
Awesome.
So great. And this book has a 4 out of 5 on Goodreads. This is a psychological horror novella from 1980. It was part of a anthology that King put out in that same year. And then he put out another novella or another anthology a couple years later. And The Mist was in that one as well. So a little bit about our lovely Stephen King. He was born in Portland, Maine. He and his wife, Tabitha, have been married and together together since 1971. I think that is just adorable. I love that. Tabitha is also a writer. He has been writing full-time since 1973. He was a teacher and then sold the book Carrie, and Carrie just blew up. And ever since 1973, he's been able to write full-time. And then he also appears in some of his own adaptations. He's in It too. He's in Mr. Mercedes. And then what was the other one? Under the Dome.
Oh, that failed television show?
He was also in Sons of Anarchy, which is really cool.
Dude, this man is a trip.
Yeah, he was also in Fever Pitch, the movie. He threw out the first pitch at a Red Sox game in the movie.
No way. I used to love that movie. I gotta go back and watch Fever Pitch.
That's really all I got. I mean, you know Stephen King. He's just like the king of horror. You know, his reputation kind of precedes him. So those are just the funnest facts that I found about him.
He's so odd. He big ups Maine, which is not like a state that gets a lot of bigging up, but he's like the Maine guy, which I think is really funny. He also just is so aggressive on Twitter, and I just think it's awesome. Yeah, I just think he's a hilarious dude. He's so odd and weird, and he is so, I mean, his stories are messed up, and he's so chill. It makes no sense.
That's like one of my biggest questions, that if I was in a room with him and I could sit down with him and I could ask him like three questions, one of my big questions would be, how are you functioning? If you are literally like writing about this stuff every single day, like, how does that not mess with your brain?
I know. Like, he has kids. Like, he's been married for, like, 50 years. He's so normcore, and yet he's, you know, the master of horror. It makes no sense, but hey, I'm super happy we have him. Anyway, The Mist. Let's start.
Absolutely. Well, first, let's go through our characters, our summary. We have David Drayton. He is our main character. He is the narrator. He's a
functioning alcoholic. He's a misogynist. He's fun.
He's a lot. He's a lot. He's really easily swayed by green eyes, apparently.
Oh my god, yeah. He also just like absolutely so willing to leave his wife on a dime.
Yikes.
We'll talk about it.
We have Billy, his son, Big Bill.
Yeah.
There's not much to him. He's just Billy.
The way that Stephen King writes this 6-year-old boy, it's literally like, but father, what if we go out there? What will happen? I don't think he would be this articulate or aware.
No, you can't quite pinpoint what age he's at, because at one point he gets put into like the kid's cart, the front of the cart where the kid goes.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, but like how big can he be to even fit into that?
Because he's gotta be like 8 from the way he's talking, but he's gotta be like 4 to fit in there. It makes no sense.
Anyways, we got Billy. We got Ollie. We got Ollie Weeks. He's a worker at the store who helps David. He's a sharpshooter.
Literally.
He kills people, kills monsters with a gun. Yeah, that's a lot to him. We have Amanda, the green eyes, easily swayed David to just cheat on his wife.
She gets so much personality added to her.
Including the line, I know a room that has a door and a lock. That's all he needed, just to go up and sleep with her. Great.
It's a really quick affair, I would say.
And then it's described in Wikipedia of him going up and having a... Hold on, I have to pull this light up. It was so funny. Oh, here we go. So it says, Ollie is given a revolver by the young Amanda Dumfries. She and David also have passionless, stress-induced sex.
Passionless, stress-induced sex. That's awesome.
Not one word, like, about Amanda from then on. That is so great.
That's awesome. Okay, who else we got?
We got Brent Norton, who is the angry neighbor who doesn't like David and who thinks that they're all playing a trick on him. But, and then we have Mrs. Carmody, or Carmody. Yeah, my one description of her just reads, the preaching lady who is wild.
Stephen King really said, every woman in books are witches or just two-dimensional prostitutes. Let's go with that.
And he did.
He said, do I need to give them actual depth? Absolutely not. Are they important to the story? Completely. Does that matter? No.
Yeah. And those are really the most important characters. There's a couple more, but...
You know, for example, David's wife, who we hear from in the beginning and then disappears into the mist, quite literally.
Yes. So bad. Oh, poor Stephanie. I do have a summary from the book, which I want to throw it back to 1980s summaries, because come on, this thing is so good. And like so short, to the point, love it. Okay, so it's a hot, lazy day, perfect for a cookout, until you see those strange dark clouds. Suddenly, a violent storm sweeps across the lake and ends as abruptly and unexpectedly as it has begun. Then comes the mist, creeping slowly, inexorably, into town, where it settles and waits, trapping you in a supermarket with dozens of others, cut off from your families and the world. The mist is alive, seething, with unearthly sounds and movements. What unleashed this terror? Was it the Arrowhead Project? The top secret government operation that everyone has noticed, but no one quite understands? And what happens when the provisions have run out and you're forced to make your escape, edging blindly through the dim light?
Ooh, yes, yes.
Right?
Okay, guys, let's talk about what Stephen King thought it was to be a man in 1980 and what was appropriate for day-to-day life, because it's wild.
Oh boy. Okay, here's what I had. So I read the character of Amanda. She is purely here as a sexual figure so that he can slip some sort of like sex scene into this book. There is no other purpose. And the fact that she has a gun in her purse because her husband leaves her and was like, you need a protection in the form of a handgun. What?
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 What? I'm sorry. Come again. It's so insane. Because, okay, so here's what's so funny about Stephen King. And I feel like it comes up in a lot of his books for y'all who have read a lot of Stephen King is, he unintentionally is an incredible commentator on like the stupidity of like the concept of masculinity, but like clearly he's not in on the joke. Like he writes these characters like David Drayton that are like literally functioning alcoholics, so protective over their wives, but also so willing to sleep with anyone else at the drop of a hat. Every woman that Stephen King writes is this two-dimensional, like, either help me or have sex with me or I'm evil type person. And the men are always just angry or horny or hungry or thirsty. Like, they're so rageful. Oh, testosterone. And so this book is great. The horror parts of it are awesome. And like the idea is amazing. But I think Stephen King is awesome at concepts and awesome at keeping things entertaining. And I think he is horrible at writing actual human emotion and actual human dialogue and actual human feeling.
Yeah, I think that was my biggest issue with this thing, because I've been reading a lot of Sarah J. Maas, who has her own issues, but one of the things that she does really, really well is write really strong female leads that kind of like give the middle finger to like anyone who comes by them, that type of person. And I feel like Stephen King is the absolute complete opposite. Where it's like the male that gives the middle finger to everyone else that is around them.
Yeah.
And just kind of was like, what? Like, I have to do this to like save everyone in here.
I'm a protagonist, so I can do anything, man.
Yeah. And then you read the dialogue and it's just a little rough. I think this is also, I come from a really weird place because I'm reading a lot of Sarah J. Maas, really strong female leads coming into their own power. And then I'm reading a lot of Kate Quinn, who is about World War II female war heroes.
So then you read this.
And it's a little different feel. But I agree with you. The horror aspect, the like, oh, fuck, like, what are they going to do? That type of feeling. You can't. The fact that this book was this long and was able to tell such a thorough story, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, in a little over 200 pages, you know, I highlighted the very first page because it's just an incredible way to start a book. This is what happened. On the night that the worst heat wave in northern New England history finally broke, the entire western Maine region was lashed with the most vicious thunderstorms I have ever seen. To just jump you in and be like, this is what's happening, everybody. The mist set in, and we are going from there.
Yes.
What's funny is he writes for the everyman, but also doesn't dumb it down.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about easing you into any situation. He's very much like, you're fine. You can deal with this. You can get on my wavelength. And I love that about him. I think that for what he lacks in understanding, like, I don't know how any human actually operates, he makes up for in these wild tales. I think maybe why he's not great at conveying actual human emotion is he leads everything with terror. Like, he's amazing at describing fear and making one fearful. So I think he just doesn't really understand how to do anything that isn't in the realm of fear and terror.
Yeah. And I think the fact that he is so strong in the fear and terror aspect is like people just kind of don't really care about the rest of it. It's going to be what it's going to be. I'm there for the monster. I'm there for like the jump scare of it all. And that's why they're reading Stephen King.
Yeah, exactly.
I think like you were saying, he just jumps right in and he'll just throw little nuggets in there. Like this line, I tapped the horn twice lightly and she raised the hand holding the clippers in answer. We pulled out. I haven't seen my wife since then. And then you're like, oh, what?
It's like the most, I mean, I have so much to say because the thing is, so when I was going through my Stephen King phase, I read this like after having read a lot of them. And this is the one that consistently stands out because it's so pungent. Like you just feel like you are in the grocery store with them. You feel the sweat rolling down their faces. You feel the smell of the freezers and all the food starting to rot. It's the best book for letting people's imaginations run wild because you are envisioning your own monsters, and he doesn't need to make things that scary in what he writes because your brain will do the rest, and he knows your brain will do the rest. So when he describes a fleshy pink tentacle eating somebody, you immediately see the worst of the worst there. It's really, I mean, it's just kudos to him. He writes a brilliant story. And I think what's also equally amazing about this book is it's such a microcosm of the greater human problem. Yeah, what happens when a group of people are put into one space with an imaginary foe? Well, naturally, some of them wouldn't believe it. Naturally, some of them would go to the extreme and think that you have to be as ugly as the monsters out there. Naturally, some of people would drive to be protectors. So you see all these natural splits, and you yourself make a decision of what camp you would be in. So even if it's not the most well-written and the most articulate, even if it's somewhat crude, it's still a great commentary on humanity and it still gets at your base fear.
Well, and it's a great way, I think, for me, having not read Stephen King, this as the first little like introduction, I think is perfect because it's short, it's to the point. I read this today. I was telling Ella, I read this today, one sitting, just sat down, read it. I put a little bit of it on audio and like did my stuff around the house, and it was so good. You just can't not listen to it or not read it. That type of just story that you're able to from beginning to end in my case 160 pages and have it just be like so perfectly told, fabulous. Because there's enough plot twists where, you know, you have people leave and they're able to go out into the mist, and then they go into the pharmacy, but then they see like a completely different monster, and then they're trying to like fight that monster, and then they end up making it back into the grocery store, and then you have the absolute chaos that is ensuing because of Mrs. Carmody preaching to these people that we need to sacrifice someone. So then she's causing this other conflict within a conflict. And I think that in every single scene, you're like hitting some sort of conflict, which that is like what I loved about it, was every single page something was happening.
You're never bored.
No, never bored. I also think going to a Christian university, that Mrs. Carmody character, oh my God, that's so real. So that like overcorrection of this faithful character, that was the character that stuck out the most to me in this book.
That's a really interesting point. Yeah, I think her character and then Brent Norton's character, who starts this faction that ends up being called the Flat Earthers, that don't believe anything that's happening to them, and they literally go out and kill themselves because they just walk out into the mist because they don't believe it. They have aged in this very prevalent way because we're living in like a post January 6th horror show era. We're living in an age of such extreme conspiracy theorists and real domestic terrorism because of those conspiracy theories. So reading characters like a Mrs. Carmody or Brent Norton that are these people who are like,
yeah, well, you know, I don't care if these people die who are following me. You know, I'm going to commit blood sacrifice to make myself big. It's
scary because I think Stephen King was probably writing this at a time when those characters seemed more extreme than they are to us now. Now we see those people on the news and we read about them frequently, and they're just in our daily lives. But so when those characters are dealt with so succinctly, because he was writing this in 1980, before like the Reaganism thing really got going, I think he's probably just writing this as like,
yeah, what if there were monsters?
And so the characters can be like kind of funny and ridiculous instead of like hard hitting like fiction.
I think hot take.
Hot take me away.
I don't even know if this is a super hot take, maybe like a warm take. I think that this needs to replace Lord of the Flies in all schools.
Talk to me about it.
This tells the exact same story without being like a super... I hate Lord of the Flies. Oh my God.
I hate Lord of the Flies. This is, you know what? This is an anti-Lord of the Flies podcast.
But I think that this tells that story of what if you're putting into a situation where government is not an issue? You don't have like access to the outside world. And so what would happen if you're in your little, like you said, microcosm in your own little community and there is a huge threat that stands right outside? This is what happens. And so I think that it is a commentary, especially today, on what is happening in our world, which is like crazy how much it applies to today.
Dude, yeah. Brent Norton is essentially this guy who is just saying, follow me, don't believe anything that you're hearing, just follow me, and then ends up not only hurting, but killing several people because he refuses to believe what is objective truth. And so it's very hard to read that part of the book and not be like, It's sort of an allegory for like a lot of the current political climate. But also, I totally agree with the Lord of the Flies take, because I hated Lord of the Flies for several reasons. But the thing with Lord of the Flies that really got me is it's like, yeah, let's have 12 and 13 year olds read a book about 12 and 13 year olds who get on an island and their base instinct is just to kill each other. Whereas this book says, hey, what if people of all ages and all kinds were put into a situation where they had to have their base instincts? And yes, some people wanted to kill each other, but some people wanted to do different things, like protect one another or care about one another.
Yeah, and I think on that same thread with Lord of the Flies, now it's getting a Lord of the Flies hate reel. You know, the author is writing from a place of everyone is inherently evil. Everyone, if given the chance, would kill their neighbor to survive. And in this book, you have so many different types of groups of people, because there are people who follow this Mrs. Carmody character who aren't going to take the step forward to actually kill someone for this. They may be following her because it's like, this is the only thing that makes sense as of right now. This is God's wrath coming down. But there's also like, you have the heroes of the story, which in Lord of the Flies, the heroes of the story are like, you know, few and far between. And in the sense that they are hunted for like trying to do the right thing, which in this book they kind of are as well, but also there's like a bigger group of them that are able to like stand up to this character, whereas in Lord of the Flies they think there were like two characters that were trying to go up against a group.
Well, it's sorry, go on.
No, I was just gonna say, I think that idea of being inherently evil is like a very dangerous idea to plant in the minds of young kids.
Totally it is. I mean, that's yeah, it really, really is. And we can stop talking about the Lord of the Flies now, because honestly, we should just do a small sips one day where we just both go off about Lord of the Flies, because I can really like talk about Lord of the Flies. But I do think, again, it's weird how prescient this book is. Having a book that says not everyone wants the worst, and not everyone is unwilling to agree with one another, unwilling to agree with objectivity, unwilling to agree with what we all experience. And instead setting the message of like, yes, some people may be difficult. Some people may have an ill will, but most people want good. Most people want unity is important. It's a nice message to have And whether or not it's ultimately true, I don't know. The protagonist of this book is not a great husband. He's not a great father. He is not a great a lot of stuff. But he fundamentally wants to everyone to be safe and everyone to be okay. And that's not a terrible takeaway.
No. And he wants to beat the living poop out of anyone who sends a, you know, a young boy to try to turn on a generator or clear the vent for a generator.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did beat the crap out of two dudes. So, you know.
Honestly, though, if I were in his situation, I would have done the exact same thing. I would have been livid.
I mean, that's the thing, guys. Basically, how they first figure out what's in the mist is there's a scene where David and three other dudes go out to try to turn the generator back on to try to get the grocery store up and running again. And these two older guys send this young shop clerk to go turn the generator on. And he gets eaten by a series of tentacles. And then once they have closed the door, David just beats the crap out of these two dudes because he can't believe that they did that. And one of them later ends up joining the Flat Earthers and becomes, you know, totally... he joins Mrs. Carmody's crew and becomes a total, like, evangelical, radical, like...
That also shows that is a cult. That is how cults form, is they, like, prey on your terror.
That's the other part of this book. The political and religious... Actually, maybe... I mean, this is not an original thought. I'm sure other people have commented about the mist in this, but, like, the two factions, Norton's political kind of anarchy and then Mrs. Carmody's religious anarchy, are both so reminiscent of the conservative extremism and Christian extremism that certain factions of America have developed over the years. And it's really scary to watch it in a situation like that where it's on such a micro scale.
Mm-hmm. Because it's so real. It's scary real. I have a question. If you were caught in that grocery store at that time, like, which faction do you think you would fall into?
I mean, you know, it's hard because I think all of us want to say Drayton. I have a feeling I would probably fall into the faction that is in support of whatever David is doing. But, like,
yeah.
I truly don't think I would be courageous enough to leave the store, to go to the pharmacy, to see if other people were out there. Like, everyone has a question like this, whether it's like a zombie apocalypse, whatever, some kind of mass event like that. And the truth is, like, I think I'd probably be part of the contingent that, like, stays and ends up killing themselves. I don't think I would be a person who'd want to live in the world in the new way that it is. And I don't think I would... I don't think I literally would be brave enough to be the person who's, like, leading on the front lines of whatever the new world is. What about you?
Honestly, I think I would be the person that wants to just go out to the car to get the gun and ends up tying the rope to himself. And then he gets, like, eaten alive. I think that's what I would do. Because I would be like, I want to help in some way. I don't want to take a side. I don't want to, like, mess with anyone. But, like, I'm going to do my own thing kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I would probably get eaten for it.
Your foolhardiness would help you lose. Yeah.
My indecisiveness would probably kill me.
But it's so funny because, like, I can't say what I would do in a monster is about to eat me scenario because there's never really been that. It's the unthinkable, right? And I think he writes the unthinkable in a really realistic way.
Well, and I think any of these situations, anything he's writing about, any monster that he's writing about, any mist type thing that he's writing about, all of that stems from a place of fear and a place of terror, which is all very real. And so these are all everyone's responses to what would happen. Like, you are scared to death, literally. What would you do? And so I think that's where this is so real, is because that sort of feeling, you kind of, like, you don't know the feeling of, you know, a monster encroaching on your, being right up here on your face, but you know that feeling of being absolutely terrified. And so I think he writes from that point and would be like, what would you do? Flight, fight, or
freeze? It's terrifying to realize that the best version of the future for everyone is not what you think. You know, we're not being put into deadly situations like this immediately because it's a fictional scenario. But I don't think it's a stretch to say that Stephen King with this book is really trying to make you think about your fellow man and how much everyday politics plays into your actions. For his incapability of understanding human emotion, he's very insightful for understanding specifically American thought processes.
Oh, 100%. And I think it's more applicable today than it even was when he wrote it. He's like the Simpsons of authors. He just keeps predicting things that will happen. Well, let's get into our final ratings. I rated this, I agreed with the Goodreads, so I did a 4 out of 5. It was just, it's just a great read. You just fly through it. It's a great thriller novella. You know, you're fearful of the mist, but you're also fearful of what's happening inside the store, and you want them to get out. My one point was taken off because of the character development.
The misogyny.
But, like, there's not a whole lot of room to, like, build a character within X amount of pages. But also, yes, I didn't like any of the characters all that much, honestly. The only one I liked was, like, the old lady at the very end, who also, like, went into the pharmacy with them and had the raid and the fire. That was the one character I liked. But even then, I don't even remember her name. Then also, I watched the movie as well, and the ending of the movie is far better than the ending of the book.
Yeah, which we shouldn't spoil it, because honestly, it's worth watching the movie for the ending.
Oh, 100%. The ending of the book, you know, it's very open-ended. It's very, you know, I'm leaving this note. We're going to, like, start on our adventure. Like, what's going to happen? And then the ending of the movie was very finite. And even Stephen King came out and said that was better. He was like, I loved what they did with that ending. So that, yeah, 4 out of 5. It's a great read.
Okay. I give it probably, I would say the same. Actually, I might even give it a 3.75, to be honest. I just get really bothered by his lack of character development. I think even though I think it's incredibly well written as an analysis of America, and incredibly well written as a thriller, and I really love the weird monsters that come out of the mist, I cannot get past the lack of character development, specifically female character development. And yeah, like you said, I just don't really like anybody. And the thing is you don't have to like anyone in a book, but I don't like anyone because they're not well written, not because they're bad people. Some of them are bad people. It's just that I more just can't stand how they are written and what they say. Like, their dialogue is just, the dialogue is just so poor.
So bad.
So, yeah.
That's good. That's a fair assessment.
Sorry, Steven. Recommendations?
Okay, so I guess TV shows, I have 2. So one I alluded to earlier, Stranger Things, because the mist is because the government has opened up some portals to other worlds.
The Upside Down?
Very easy connection there. So I would say that's one of them. Yellow Jackets is the other one, I would say.
Oh, it's a great one.
That is your typical kind of Lord of the Flies-esque, but it's if females were there instead of males and they were high school aged and they were in a terrible plane crash. So what kind of happens when you are separated from society and from government and you have to make your own rules? That's kind of what Yellow Jackets is. Oh boy, I honestly did not prep a book or a movie. Well, I guess a movie. Go watch The Mist. I don't know. Oh, I actually do have a book. The Fifth Wave. The Fifth Wave is kind of a young adult dystopian, what would happen if this, like, crazy, almost like alien attack happened and caused all these natural disasters in the world. There's, like, another book that I have on the tip of my tongue that also takes place in a grocery store. Anyways, you can go while I try to find this book.
I will say, movie-wise, I thought of The Fog, the John Carpenter movie, which is like an 80s classic, very reminiscent of this. Instead of The Mist, it's The Fog that sweeps into this coastal California town, and there ends up being ghosts in the fog that they have to run from, and it's very similar and kooky and, like, but it's much lighter. Like, there's no political commentary, there's no kind of commentary in The Fog, it's just fun. I also thought of Nausicaä Valley of the Wind, the Hayao Miyazaki movie, because that basically is like what would happen if a mass environmental catastrophe happened and people had to start living in that. So, and it's taking, instead of the protagonist being like a middle-aged guy, what if it was a young girl? I will also recommend for TV shows, Total Drama Island.
Yes.
An early 2000s, or I guess kind of mid-2000s, Nickelodeon show about a group of people who are put onto an island and have to, like, I don't know, win this fake reality show. It's a cartoon. It's great. It really reminded me of this.
Oh, that's good.
Because it's a great commentary on human nature. And then also, I'm going to say Ben 10 Alien Force, because Ben 10 Alien Force deals with aliens, a specific kind of alien coming down and trying to take over Earth, and Ben 10 and his friends are the only people who can stop them. There you go.
That's really good. I can't find the book that I'm thinking of, but if I ever do find it.
I was really trying to rack my brain for, like, monster-related things, but the only thing I could ultimately come up with... I'm really, like, bringing out the 12-year-old in me today. Sorry, everybody. Do you remember the scene, Jenna, in the SpongeBob movie where SpongeBob goes into, like, the abyss?
Yes.
And it's, like, literally the plot of The Mist?
Yes. It's not the new one. It's not the, like, weird new one that just came out.
Not the new one. We're talking old school SpongeBob movie.
The OG.
There's a terrifying scene where he has to wait at a bus stop. And it still haunts me to this day, clearly, because I'm 22. And I think that movie came out in, like, 2011. Anyway, guys, this has been a wild ride. Sorry that we got so loose today, but...
Oh, actually, I want one more question before we yeet out of here. If you were to name your top three Stephen King adaptations, what would your top three be?
I have to say, I think of the new It movies, the first It movie that came out was really, really good. Like, I think the one where they're kids and not the one where they're, like, weird CGI'd adults. I hated that, but the one where they're kids is really, really good. And Stephen King, like, okayed that adaptation. I mean, The Shining, which is nothing like the book, by the way. Like, if you haven't read The Shining, people, it's a totally different experience to the movie, but it's fantastic, even though Stephen King hates it. He hates that movie, but it's a great movie, so deal with it. And then, God, the third, I would have to say, everyone, say it with me, Stand By Me. That movie rules. It is incredible. That's it. Okay, go for it.
Okay. No, that's good. I think my top three, I have to say, The Mist was a great adaptation. They did a really good job. That one, Pet Sematary, the OG, so good. Just the little kid slicing the Achilles heel. That scene is just so good. And then, yeah, The Shining. It's just, I can't, being from Colorado, I had, like, a kid in my class that for his birthday in the fifth grade went to the hotel at The Shining and stayed in the haunted room. So
in the fifth grade?
Oh, yeah.
That's horrifying.
And everyone was like, whoa, he's so badass.
Oh, my God. That's so scary. Wow. Okay, good for that kid. I dressed up as Jack Torrance in the seventh grade for Dress as Your Favorite Literary Character Day, and I had a cardboard axe, and my teacher thought I was insane. So that's just a fun fact about me.
That is so funny. Of course you would.
It's quite an interesting day at school.
You're like, yeah, I was a weird kid.
Yeah, you're like, I mean, I am. You know, I was. Yes, I'm not gonna lie to you.
This is always so fun as usual. I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Bye now.
Thanks so much for listening. If you liked it, please go give it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. If you want more book-related content, you can find us on Instagram and TikTok at RW Reads Podcast. Again, that's at RWReadsPodcast. That's at RW Reads Podcast on Instagram and TikTok. Until next week, keep your books open and your drink glasses full. Thanks all.